A little bit after 6 o'clock before the live show later on tonight, it's Eric Chase with another podcast episode. Let me welcome in some, one friend, one new person to tonight's podcast, Lauren Lindstrom and Sarah Elms from The Blade. Hi, ladies.
Hello.
Thank you for taking some time to be here tonight.
Yeah, thanks You're for welcome. Having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's good to meet you, Sarah.
It's very nice to meet you, Eric.
Is it? How did Lauren pitch this to you?
She said Eric is really fun, good conversationalist, and he won't ask you too many uncomfortable questions, so you better stick to that.
No, I mean, my uncomfortable, it's not like putting you on the spot. It's more awkward uncomfortable.
It's okay. I'm good at that.
Yeah. I know.
I cover city government.
That's what we do for a living.
Exactly. Lauren and Sarah are here to talk about a lot of what they have going on with The Blade and what their side of the media is like. I was thinking of like what I can ask you guys here tonight. And I figured I'm going to whip out a lot of questions that people usually ask me over the course of our conversation here. But I wanted to start with like lighter stuff. Lauren, I'm sorry the Brewers lost.
Oh my goodness. Oh, it was so painful. It was just, so for folks who don't know, I was born and raised in Wisconsin, and so I have not known what good baseball is for most of my life. And they just had such a good year this year,
yeah.
And I watched it from afar and listened to it and got free trials of radio streaming apps so I could listen to Bob Uecker for like 3 games and then cancel it, and it was really fun. And I think they have a good team, so hopefully... This is not a one and done, but they were a lot of fun.
Get
to watch.
The MLB at Bat app. It's $20 for the year to listen to
the
games. It's so worth it. It goes up a little bit each year, but it's so worth it, especially if you're an out of town person.
When I was in college, I used to have a couple.
Excuse me.
A couple guys on my floor who all like pitched in for one subscription and that ran out, so I should really.
Totally worth it. At least for the radio stuff.
Yeah.
Sarah, you're not originally from here?
I am not, no. I grew up in the suburbs north of Chicago, and then I went to college in Milwaukee, so actually a little bit of Wisconsin sports fandom over here. Not so much the Brewers, I wasn't paying attention, but
it's fine.
The Packers, Lauren and I.
Did you guys
it's a
get
good
together?
Bonding
yeah,
activity.
Yeah,
for
we
us.
Bond over that at work. So I moved here from Traverse City most recently, though.
Oh, wow. So you're been, total Midwesterner.
Yeah, I lived in Wyoming for a little bit out of college, so that's like West, but otherwise I came back.
How'd you wind up there?
I applied to, I don't know, like 40 journalism jobs, and that one said, yes, come work for us. And I was like, sweet, never been there, I'll try it. So I lasted a little over a year.
Did you like it?
I did. I lived in Gillette, Wyoming, which is kind of like a more barren, it's a lot of sage grass and open coal mines, so it's not when you think the beautiful mountains. So it was close to a lot of pretty things, but it got very cold.
Right.
Yeah. Far from family.
So cold places, too. I mean, where we live now.
It's a different kind of cold.
Is it really?
It's a different kind of... There's nothing there to block the wind.
Yeah, I get it.
It's different. And you can't make snowballs. It's so dry, so it's not really that fun.
Pass.
Yeah. Yeah.
People would ask me when I would complain about the cold here, they're like, isn't it cold in Philadelphia? I'm like, you don't understand the difference between, like... The coldest day of the year being 29 and the coldest day of the year being like 19 with a wind chill, which is what we get here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but that's not...
No,
okay.
Then
all
it
right.
feels like
you
zero.
Win.
Yeah.
We would hit like, you know...
Yeah, try Green Bay.
I was going to say 10 below and then a 30 below wind chill.
I actually will argue that the city of Chicago, that is the coldest winters that I've experienced is the city of Chicago. It's
probably.
A wet cold. It's so windy. It like soaks you to the bone. So actually, I think if you have done a winter in Chicago, you can do one anywhere.
I don't like the gray of it.
Oh, yeah. It makes, it's, I need sunshine.
Yeah. Because even
it
if
zaps it, your energy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's like, at least when the sun comes out, it gives me a little bounce back in my stem. The other, you talk about it being put on the spot. I figure at least this time of year, this is a good icebreaker, even though we've already broken the ice. Lauren, candy corn.
Boo. No.
Oh, good. There's
no, it's Satan's candy.
There's discord. I like it.
Oh, no. I love candy corn. I understand people say that candy corn was made once in like 1975 and they reuse the batch of candy corn every year, but the pumpkins are the best. Also, I like any food you can really play with so you can make, your teeth out of the candy corn.
No.
Then eat it. Oh, no, it's great. Sugar boost. Love it.
I like it. I don't like the pumpkins. And now I feel like I'm more enabled because there are people like Lauren who post those dumb memes telling me how awful it is. But I really like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't even have a sweet tooth. Have you, Sarah, have you heard about the secret that some people suggest where if you take some salty peanuts in the same handful and eat it, it's delicious?
Really?
Yeah.
I have not, but I would try that.
Lauren, would you do that? No? You don't like the waxiness?
No, no. Why is waxy a good
adjective? The texture is good. The texture is good.
No, I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Halloween candy then, Lauren?
Oh, probably Reese's. But that's not a Halloween candy. I mean, that's an all of the year type.
And that's everybody's favorite,
That's everybody's favorite.
So give me something else.
Oh. I do like the white chocolate Kit Kats.
Okay.
I will pick through. They have like a mixed bag, and I will just pick through the ones, and then there's, you know, all the other ones left. But
Sarah?
White chocolate is.
A second favorite or another like of Halloween candy?
I have unpopular candy liking opinions.
Oh, yeah. This is the girl who likes banana Laffy Taffy.
I ate three of those today.
Like, if I go down the list of worst candies ever, check all the boxes.
Banana Laffy Taffy. So good.
What's another nasty one?
Oh, the black jelly beans. Like the...
Pretty yucky.
Yeah. Those are good. Like the real big sugary ones, the like old-fashioned ones, those are good too.
Right.
These are not all my favorite candies. I really like chocolate, just so everyone knows that too.
So you cover city government, correct?
Yep.
And that's your lone beat?
Yep. Yeah, just since the most recent mayor, Wade Capscavage, was elected. Yes, I can spell his name now from memory.
Right.
But yeah, so I've been doing that since January and got some new faces on city council, started with the new mayor, so.
Because Ignacio went on to his staff, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He was a listener to the former show that I used to do, and he would tweet things, and I'd reference him from time to time. What were you doing before that?
Before that, I was covering education very briefly, TPS and UT and Owens. I really enjoyed covering TPS, writing about younger kids and the public schools, I think, is both interesting and very important. And then when I started here 2 years ago, I was covering the suburbs, mostly Sylvania, a little bit of Ottawa Hills. But yeah, Sylvania City Council was nice to me. That's where I started here.
Lauren, you do health, but do you also do like general interest stuff?
Everyone does a little bit of general interest because we all get thrown into stuff, particularly in election season.
We're going to get into that.
Oh, yeah. I've been on the healthy for a little over 2 years. Before that, I was truly general assignment, so it was a little bit of everything, cops and features and weekend assignments, and it's been good. It's a good way to learn a city to just literally be thrown into the most different of assignments. It's a good introduction to Toledo to meet the mayor one day and some, you know, person with a crazy passion that's got this weird, you know, kind of wonderful thing going on, business out of their house or something. So.
You're just like health stuff now, right?
Yeah.
Do you ever run out of stories in that regard?
No. I have a whole list of things that I should be doing. The nice thing about health is that, like, literally, if it has to do with how people live their lives, you can argue it's a health story. I mean, anything from go get your flu shots and, you know, hey, this is actually a reminder. Everyone should go get their flu shots. But
you don't get the flu from it, I swear.
No. And, you know, folks who are less healthy than you might get the flu from you. So please get your flu shot. Covering acquisitions and changes in our hospital systems to our obviously very pressing opioid crisis. And there's a lot of things that you can argue are a health story. So I have not run out of things yet.
I want to talk about some of these things and what you enjoy about your jobs and what you might have learned in an eye-opening fashion in what you do. But I want to ask you, like I said, the nuts and bolts. Like, there'd be people who would think when you know, we were doing the morning show, so do you just like get home at like 11 o'clock every day? No, it doesn't work like that. Most of us work 8-hour days. So I'll start with you, Sarah. What's your day like for a newspaper writer?
So I am one of the reporters that comes in a little bit later in the day so that I typically stay a little later at the newsroom. So I don't know. It's kind of boring in the beginning of the day. You're checking email, making sure you didn't miss things, checking your competitors' websites to make sure you didn't miss anything. But I'm usually checking city council's schedule, figuring out what events are going on, what's in their agenda packet, and then trying to read either more statewide news or some national news to see like what we could localize. So I'm trying to think of an example recently. Talking about the lead law that also falls into Lauren's realm, that is something that is, you know, a statewide issue that people look at. medical marijuana. That's something that's a statewide issue that, you know, you can see, okay, what's Toledo doing?
Mm-hmm.
And also just calling your sources. I mean, checking in and saying,
what's up?
Hey, what's going on? I mean, I don't work at one government center, so I don't know everything that's happening.
Right.
So it's a lot of mining for stories, but also just staying in touch with people to see what's going on and see what they care about. Ask your neighbors.
When you say competition, you don't have to name them if you don't want to, but, and we can talk about this in a larger way moving on, like, isn't everything your competition? Like, when we do radio now, this is far different from, like, and I realize this is a podcast, but it's not like just the station that's down the dial. It's people listening to Netflix in their car and all. I mean, this is why I wanted to get together with you guys, because we both face the same battle, the fragmentation of media and the waning of people's interests and that pie, more slices. So who's your competition? If you want to mention them locally, great, but also beyond that.
Yeah, I think there's kind of like two parts of what you're talking about. One, it's there's reporters who I see from Channel 13, Channel 24, Channel 11, who come, I see them at every city council meeting. We know each other. We kind of always wonder, well, I wonder what your story is today or what your deadline is. Maybe I'll get this first. Maybe I'll tweet this before you, or, you know, you got a tip and I wish I got that. There's that local competition, but you're right that we just, as any news organization, any media organization, you're always competing to be the person that someone looks to first. So whereas you want, you know, people to listen to your podcast mm-hmm. or tune into you on air instead of other people,
right.
You know, you want to be the most relevant. So that's something that we work to do too. You kind of have to think about that.
How much of, and I'll get to you, Lauren, I promise. How much of your day is in the newsroom as opposed to bouncing around talking to people?
Too much. Too much.
It
too
should
much
be, we in. Should be out more. We should always be out more than we are.
I know what this is like. This is, we wish management would get out of our way and let us go do our jobs. We wish corporate would back off and so we could stop checking boxes so I can go out and do the job. What you paid.
It's that, but it's also on us for getting comfortable. I mean, I've been covering City Hall, like I said, since January. I'm super comfortable just going through the agenda or calling various council members or members of the mayor's administration and saying, hey, what's up? Or I think this is interesting. Who's working on this in your administration? Or who's talking about this at the next city council meeting? And I'm like, oh, I've got this great story. You turn it in and your editor goes, wait, where's a real person? I mean, these are all elected officials or people who are on a salary right. from the city. And so that's on us.
Right. Who's
too.
The person whose bill is going to go up because the regional water deal does or doesn't go through? Or
yep.
like, who's the, I don't know. I think, yeah, like, we always could do a better job of trying to find people. And you sometimes get really exasperated because it is sometimes like finding a needle in a haystack of like, how do you find the person who wants to talk to you, can eloquently speak about what they want to talk about, and like has a real connection to whatever you're writing about.
And you still make deadline.
And you still
right.
make deadline. And, you know, they're not like in Fremont and can only talk to you at 7 in the morning and whatever. But at the same time, anytime you find that, like, if I think about like my favorite interviews or my most like, this is why I like to sound cheesy, but like why you do journalism
yeah.
moments, they're never like, I got to interview this, you know, deputy director of this, you know, whatever
mm-hmm.
organization. It's like the mom who, you mm-hmm. know, fought so hard for her kids, some, you know, rare health condition, or, you know, people who have been, you know, fighting with their insurance company to get their limits raised because their kids have cancer or whatever. Those are always the ones that I think of when I think back to interviews that I've found meaningful or I felt like have done a good job of conveying what an issue really means when it comes down to real people. Like, it's always getting those voices in there. So it's a good reminder, even though sometimes it's so hard.
To relate to that, people would often ask me, you know, you could probably imagine, what's it like to meet so-and-so? I'm like, well, one, they don't just like stroll through. I've been fortunate enough to meet some big people and I have higher opinions and lower opinions, but the best celebrity meeting. Do you guys remember the band Blessed Union of Souls?
Nope.
Really? Are you lying?
I'm not lying.
Okay, fine. They were like a pop alternative band in the 90s. Had a handful of hits. They did the song Hey Leonardo.
Sing a little
she
bit.
She likes me for me.
Oh, yeah.
Be-
okay.
Mm-hmm. They did a show for a concert, and normal guys. Actually, they were here at Bar 145 a couple of years ago.
Huh.
But that stands out to me the most because the guy was a big football fan. It was the NFL playoffs when they did the show. They came and hang out afterwards, and he was just, he loved the fact that he could talk about his team, the Cincinnati Bengals, with somebody as opposed to everything else. And it's just one of those unexpected moments. It's like, this is why I do this. And, you know, you meet really good people outside of the shine of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and guess what? That's what people want to listen to or read, too, because it's more relatable.
Mm-hmm. Lauren, what's your day like?
So mine is a lot like Sarah's. I have, obviously, sometimes a bigger geographical range of what I'm, or maybe a bigger kind of type of story range than hers, because one day I'm sitting through a four-hour health department board meeting and, you know, looking at how they use their money. And sometimes it's going out to a hospital and, you know, seeing a new, like germ-killing robot zapper thing. Like, it's a lot of, like, tech science-y stuff, and also more public health, and then a lot of construction site tours. We're building this cancer center or whatever. So it can be a good mix, which I really like. I mean, I could, if I wanted to, make it a 9-to-6 Monday through Friday job, but thankfully there's been enough variety that there is a lot of, you know, coming in and checking your email and putting calls out and putting out public records requests and, you know, the kind of from your desk journalism. But the nice thing is that, you know, as we are being encouraged to get more visual and more videos and things like that, it really does force you to get out of the office because, like, we can't take a video from our desk. So,
nobody wants to watch me talk on video.
Right. And every interview is better in person than it is over the phone. Mm-hmm. Like, every single interview.
Absolutely.
Because you are a person, suddenly, as opposed to a voice over the phone.
Sarah, you mentioned your editor. If you don't want to answer this, that's fine. I don't edit this stuff, but I'd be happy to. You get along with them? Do you like, or her? Do you like this person? Do they challenge you? Do you feel like that this person makes you better at what you do?
Yeah, all of the above. I think we have a good group of editors who bring different levels of experience, different levels of reporting backgrounds.
Institutional knowledge to Toledo.
Absolutely.
The nice thing is that, and we report to, there's kind of like, depending on what the thing is, you might be reporting in less of an HR sense, but just in a, like, who do you talk to about these things? There's a bunch of people who fall under that umbrella. And you go to for different things. Certainly if we need to get our lawyers involved with something, you go to a different editor than like, do I have permission to start my day 2 hours later? You know, I mean, it's a different conversation, but, I mean, for the most part, like, I've had really good luck of having people back me up, particularly from the outside when folks don't want to play ball with us and they are legally obligated to.
What are like two or three challenges that you maybe regularly run into, or maybe one big one that you frequently encounter and it makes it a painful part of the job?
I think, and this is maybe more, well, I don't know if it's more personal or if it's every newspaper reporter especially is feeling this, but especially on my beat, I love my like day-to-day city government policy reporting, you know, letting people know where they're spending the money or what programs they're looking at or what decisions they're making, and those are quick. I spend one day or half a day reporting and writing that story, but it's finding the time to do either more in-depth investigative stories or more enterprising people stories.
Like,
I mean,
big story, more narrative types.
Yeah, exactly. Because I enjoy that type of writing a lot too. But it's tough on my beat to carve out the time, especially when, as Lauren said, you know, there is this push to, okay, well, you need to have a Twitter presence, you need to push for video,
you need to go Facebook Live, you need to
which I get all of. You know, I want our industry to be sustainable, but I mean, it's no secret that newspapers aren't, you know, these massive. I mean, you come in the Blades building,
we're not a cash
and there's
cow.
There's rooms that used to be filled with desks and people that aren't anymore, and so it's just figuring out what people care about to read, what you are obligated to. I mean, it's your duty as a reporter, a watchdog, to report on some things, but then also,
even if it's not particularly sexy or clickable.
Right.
Like, this is how they're spending your money.
Right.
Yes. I mean, regional water is
boring as anything.
Yeah, but it's so important. But so it's balancing that and then doing the stories that I really want to do. So
I talked to Nick about that, Comice. As I told Lauren before, and I'm like, call you Loose Cannon Comice. I love Nick. He's a good friend of mine. But he told me that he got pushed onto the water committee. And he's like, I know it doesn't sound sexy, but I'm really getting into it. I was like, you know what? Of all the city issues that I've really immersed myself in and embraced this place as my home, I don't care one iota about the water. Not one bit. He's like, I get it, but I'm in on it. So I get your point.
Yeah, just tell me, how much is my water going to cost? Is it safe? I'm like, I know.
But it's so hard to get people. You have to almost write a dozen stories about it to get to the point where someone says, this is what your water bill is going to go up or down. But you gotta like hope that people will truck through with you on those first 11.
And then
as you're kind of pulling the yarn, you know, as you're trying to figure this out. Because you can't just get from like point A to here's like the nice succinct.
And then if you throw something clickbaity out there or something important that you feel people really need to know, like that 11th story or so, some people might say, well, you're just doing this to like, this is sensationalizing, right? Mm-hmm. I was going to ask your turn, and I wanted to get into that a little bit. Like what you might say to people, but what are some of your challenges at work?
Well, part of it is it is such a big tent that you just always feel like I am not covering something I should. Like, I think there's just this fire hose of like, I could pick half of the things that I pay attention to and write as many stories as I currently am, but just about fewer topics.
Right.
So I think there's always just this like, are we doing enough? Am I getting enough variety in what I'm covering? But I think, too, it's getting people to, you know, as part of our job as reporters, to, like, get down to, you should be able to answer the question, like, why should I care about this in the story pretty high up? And if you don't, like, what are we doing here? And I think that that's just a continual challenge for us, is to, like, keep our readers' interest and, yeah, just find it, like, make sure that everything that we're writing is in service of the reader, which... You know, it's hit and miss, but...
Somebody asked me at a mental health talk at one of the synagogues at a Jewish event back in the springtime, stood up and said, what do you say to people who say, it's all in your head, you're crazy, or they just dismiss the mental health issues? I'm like, thankfully, I guess I have a good enough reputation that people know not to ask me that stuff, but I scoff at them, and I simply won't engage. For you guys, Sarah, I'll start with you. When people... marginalized newspapers and say they're all dying, and you know the rhetoric and
call us fake news,
all that stuff, what do you do? Do you even engage? What's that like for you? You can go off as much as you want.
Yeah, I know. There's like the there's like two types. There's the reader who calls in and is criticizing the way you're reporting or writing or not reporting or writing about something, and talks about, you know, the way newspapers used to be, and you're young, you're not doing this right, you don't know, you know, the news in this community or how you should be reporting it. So there's one where they are reading our paper, and you know, I usually try and engage and ask them, well, okay, I'm not from Toledo, you know, what am I missing? What are things we should be covering better? What do you mean? Thank you for reading. You know, it's kind of building a relationship with that person, even if it's just over a 5-minute phone call.
Right.
I would say the other one, I guess, I don't know if this is your other half of this, are the ones that comment on our Facebook page and say, like, I hit the paywall. I don't care about this. Why do you make me, why do you make me pay for your articles?
Or the ones that often, I see these.
I'll just get my news on Facebook. It's like,
The real dumb people. Don't you know newspapers are dead? Why are you even writing this? What? Shut up. Like, people who just want to troll to be mean and angry.
Oh, they just have fun, yeah. To Lauren's point on that, I try, if it's online, I don't bother myself with engaging. But if someone says to me in person, well, I wish you would just lift your paywall because I really want to read that story. And I'm like, yeah, gosh, I go into restaurants too and I just eat and walk out without paying because, like, why should I really want that burger, but...
Right. This is
the guy who made it and the, you know, waitress who brought it to my table, like...
Yeah, it's people don't think of it.
Or like you never paid for the newspaper before, which you did. This is This is tough. This is something that I've had to go through and go, okay, which news sources am I willing to pay for? Mm-hmm. Because as long as the internet's been around, most of this stuff was free. Now you don't have to be we use some salty language on this podcast. You don't have to be a dick about it, like in that sense. Not that you were. But people are like, well, the paywall's up, and I used to get this for free. Well, yes, but to your point, like, this is something tangible. This is content, and it's not free, and there are people who need to get paid to do these jobs and do them well.
We're also the only ones where you're going to, you know, I understand if you don't want to click on a story that we've pulled from the wire because you can get it on CNN or whatever, right? Like, you can read national news, but when it comes down to local news, regional news, like, a lot of times we are the only ones sitting in those meetings.
Yep.
And, you know, if people don't support local media, like CNN and MSNBC are not going to come to Toledo Public Schools meetings and make sure that your levy dollars are being used in the way it was promised. And I think we just have to figure out a better way to be a absolutely vital resource in our community. And it's hard. Like, literally every newspaper in the country, world, whatever, is trying to figure out that question too. But, like, how do you make yourself essential?
To get a little, I guess, inside baseball here, like, I don't know how the ad model still exists, because Me, I'm pretty, like, I like to say that marketing just doesn't work on me. Like, I know I like what I like, and you're not going to convince me otherwise. And, oh, wait, there's an ad, but blah, blah, blah. Does the ad model work? Because, like, I've never clicked on any of that stuff.
On the ads, you mean? Like, on our website or on NewsLide, which is functional. Things load now.
Mm-hmm. I love NewsLide. I use the app every day.
I do, too, actually. Yeah. I think it's great.
But, like, when things were free, like, it was ad model supported by advertisers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the difference that I think, and I'm no expert on this by any means, but I think in talking to friends who are reporters at other print newspaper products, what they hear too is that you can sell a print ad for a lot more. A print ad generates much more revenue than a web-based ad, and I don't know like what that difference is.
Right.
But that's part of what it is. It's just...
The problem with that is, in a larger picture, is those people aren't going to be around that much longer. Mm-hmm. And they don't, while they might have it and they're going to see it, but those people often don't buy stuff. Like, my dad is 69 years old. He's at the point in his life where he doesn't buy stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. That's why we all hear, I'm sure you guys hear about like 2554 and like beyond that. That's why oldies, more stuff. That's why oldies radio stations went away, because those people didn't buy anything. So there was nothing to advertise to them. So, like jazz stations
as well.
Yeah, that's
an interesting point.
Yeah, so I'm fascinated by all this. Lauren, I know you like sports pretty much, right?
I do.
So let me ask you this, and this is totally inside stuff. Sarah, are you a sports person? Packers?
Yeah, peripheral sports person.
Can you give me your thoughts on The Athletic? Are you familiar with this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'll give the Twitter version of this. The Athletic is like trying to pull, it's a sports site, and they basically bought every good writer from every major sports website, and they've got a paywall. It's a reasonable paywall, and it's good content. Sarah, they also are expounding on trying to do storytelling narratives as opposed to more granular stuff and more modern type of reading, but you've got to pay for it, and it's venture capital, and there's no ads. Will it work? I don't know. Lauren?
I think there's always going to be enough people, depending on what their idea of success is, and I don't know what their money looks like, but there will always be people who will pay for premium, you know, it just shifts in what it is. But
right.
I think if you don't want to just get like gamers, you know, and just get box scores, I mean, I think there is a market for people who want really, who have followed these personalities and these writers for who they are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I don't subscribe to it. I'm not a big enough sports fan beyond like my teams. Like I'm not a super big, like, I'll just read a story about, you know, another NFL team that isn't mine. But I do see the appeal in it if you are so passionate about that you want to get something that, you know, you actually can't get anywhere else by design.
Yeah, and one of their things has been their CEO or whoever said some nasty things. They're like, we're going to kill newspapers or whatever the hell.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that.
That wasn't great, and I think he walked it back a little bit. But if you saw their behavior, they were buying those people out of papers and local websites, and that's what while he said it, they were also doing it with their actions. And in some ways, like, I read a lot of the writers they picked up, and I don't pay for it now because I still get plenty of what I need elsewhere, but it's almost unfair because they can write the checks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's venture capitalism. They have all that money. And I wonder what happens when it goes away. Like, does everybody's subscription double or anything like that? It's kind of like the cord cutting, which we're long past. And now I always say to people, it's like, boy, I wish there was something that could like aggregate my Hulu and my Netflix.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, you know what it's
called? And I could just go channel up and down through all the,
It's called like
on demand. Yeah.
Netflix to Hulu to Amazon. Yeah, it's called cable.
They're kind of starting to do that now because you can like bundle your Spotify and Hulu subscriptions together, or like your HBO or I think like Hulu and Showtime have a package. And so they're
AT&T has some partners.
Yeah, they're starting to go back to that. And I wonder if there's going to be kind of a small boomerang back to, like, you know,
especially
if you like Audible and you like, you know, audiobooks or whatever, but you also want to watch Netflix, we will, you know, for 65% of what you would pay separately, you know.
Or if things bounce back to cable TV, because I knew this was going to happen. You're going to cut your cord, and guess what? Well, you're going to kick your cable TV bill, your broadband, your internet bill is going to go up. So, but to your point, Sarah, this is content. You have to pay for it. And I know We all hate the fee we pay for cable, but sorry, that's a whole other conversation, right?
It is, but it's interesting. It's interesting to compare.
Also,
them.
You could get a monthly newspaper subscription for like 2 lattes. So I really can't. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time.
Well, and people, I mean, this is the thing. They want this. It's desirable content. The people who are saying, "Gosh, I want to read it. There's a paywall. I really wish I could read this." And it's like, yeah, and it's not. It's not.
Have you seen some places that, and I'm trying to remember if they were, I don't think they were newspapers. I don't know if they were magazines, but they were trying like a pay per articles model.
Yeah, I've seen
that. Which I think is really interesting because then do you like have a sliding scale as far as number of words or if there's a video? Like that's such an interesting, because for us it's kind of an all or nothing model other than you hit your 10 or whatever on your paywall. But once you have the access, you have like unlimited access. It'd be very interesting to see if people would actually be interested in saying, okay, I only want to read, it's essentially like getting Sunday home delivery. Like, I only want to read, you know, X, Y, Z, and so I'm going to pay per article. It's really interesting.
Or perhaps it's like, I would think because I think newspaper companies like you guys are smaller than like radio conglomerates where there's really only like 3. So it's hard to be progressive. Maybe newspapers can be a little bit more creative and progressive where it's like, okay, I'm going to buy, like a tier. Like I'm going to buy 20 articles a month from The Blade. And what it is like you get to read the first paragraph. So to your point of like how many words is it? Is there video? So I can read the first paragraph and know whether or not this is something I want to check off on my list.
And well, because that's the other thing is that for us, you just click on it. And even if you don't know that it's a brief or like 3 or 4 paragraphs, that counts towards your...
Yeah.
We should just suddenly be in charge of the...
All the 3 of us. Yeah. I'll run all of this stuff. You run
make
your
some
stuff.
Money.
Yeah, it's amazing, and I'm glad we're having this discussion, even if it's outside of some people's heads, because I like having these talks because we're all in the same business. We're in the attention business, and it's not just radio station versus radio station or newspaper versus newspaper. You know, it's just you guys per se. I mean, it's what are you doing with the attention that you have in your day? And we all have limited attention.
Mm-hmm. And it's the companies themselves, which all have Facebook and Twitter accounts and things that they can put out their own narrative and, you know, get a million shares on Facebook or Twitter and like don't even need any news stations to pick it up because everyone directly.
How did you guys see the stuff that I saw floating last week that Facebook, surprise, inflated their video views as so many people? You want to say it?
Pivot to video.
So many people got fired. Fox Sports went all video, and I just never went back.
Yeah.
And they inflated their video sets. I remember when I was working at the other place, they partnered with Facebook, and there was a corporate initiative to do Facebook Lives all the time. Mm-hmm. And now you look back and wonder, you know, how much of that stuff was legit, how many jobs were lost, and so much more.
Well, and they can change their algorithm, too,
At any point.
That jerked us all around.
And so, that's what I thought you were going to say. I did not see
the stuff
about the video.
Super inflated, like, essentially the however many views equates to what worth in advertising and,
Well, it's just fascinating. I'm glad we're having this discussion, too, just because it's kind of fascinating. The internet has been around for a long time, and we're still
trying to figure out
how to do this well. I mean, how to keep people like us employed and doing
all of us
good
all of us
but it's just so vital to a community, whether you're radio station or a newspaper or it's entertainment or news, what have you. I mean, it is such a vital part of the community, and so to keep it viable is such an interesting conversation.
The Facebook stuff is ingenious and evil at the same time, and I think we'll all be on the same page with this. I remember in 2005, I was working in the market at another radio station, and I was like, oh, this thing sounds cool. And
Facebook.
A competitor to MySpace, but I don't have a .edu, so I can't get it. Mm-hmm. And I think I signed up in like 2008 when they opened it up to everybody. And here was this great platform to keep track of friends and all that
stuff. Post your photos.
Exactly. And then we all got familiar with the algorithm, and they baited everyone to where, you know, a friend of mine said it perfectly. Like, you wanted to like, you know, this product or this media entity, and then all of a sudden you couldn't see them anymore. Like, even though you liked it, you might not see them because the Facebook algorithm, and everybody had to feed that beast. It was the greatest bait and switch, at least in the internet's history, and we are unfortunately all at its mercy. It's I'm sure you guys have seen it. You post a story and you're like, ah, nobody's going to read that. And then 78 shares later, mm-hmm. it's all over the freaking place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It also just complicates. The interesting thing is that I think a ton of us rely on it as a reporting tool, and also it can be sometimes our worst enemy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, no one has listed phone numbers in the phone book anymore. And so when you, particularly in, like, breaking news and crime situations, right, like, we get an identity of somebody who was in a crash or who'd been, you know, some other thing, and we're trying to find family or we're trying to find the person themselves or whatever, mm-hmm. You know, we're not looking through a phone book to see... I mean, right, sometimes we get really desperate, but we're like, put them in Facebook.
We're going to go through the phone book and call every Lindstrom.
Definitely done that, but that's not usual procedure. You find them on Facebook, and I actually get really skeptical. It's funny. Like, I sometimes if I'm out at an event and I'm like not sure if I spelled someone's last name right, I'll like put them into Facebook, and if I see the face of the person I talk to, I'm like, okay, good, I got it right.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes I get skeptical, like, why doesn't this person have a Facebook? Were they real? You know,
right.
Did I talk to the right person?
Did they give me the right name?
Right.
Yeah.
And so we can use it as a reporting tool. I can't tell you how many times we've posted in groups, neighborhood groups, like, hey, we're looking for somebody
absolutely.
Who, you know, is going to get evicted because their landlord doesn't want to comply with the lead law or whatever. Someone who's, you know, knew the child who, you know, was in this car crash or whatever. But at the same time, sometimes it makes it hard because Facebook beats us out to news a lot and rumors went wild. And then it's our job to kind of like rein that back in. And
I saw the chief a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know if he's, I think he said it there at a warehouse district meeting. And he's like, I'd rather have you call us. And maybe you should have called the non-emergency line, but I'd rather have you call us in an unnecessary panic than post it on Facebook, mm-hmm. because stuff goes sideways too fast. And I've started to mention that on the show, like, because, you know, you don't want to don't feel like you're bothering us, because we'd rather deal with you and calm you down, even though, you know, your cat's only in the tree, rather than you saying something on Facebook and we all
inciting this whole mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys?
Well, and oh.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that brings up the other point of wanting to be first, but needing to be right, and also, you know, we need to be thorough. And so it's tough. It's how do you balance that? It's you know, you can send a tweet right away of something you heard someone say, and you know, mm-hmm. it's newsworthy, right? And I'll put it up there. I think it's correct. I so hope so. But
right.
Or you hear someone says something and you say, okay, I'm going to go back to the newsroom. I'm going to do some reporting and check. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's up on everyone else's Twitter and not yours. Your editor says, weren't you at that meeting? Why don't mm-hmm. you have it? You know, it's you're constantly wrestling with
right.
being first or being right. So
do you feel that pressure from those you report to be both? And it's hard, right? Because I feel like we're almost hardwired to, you know, tweet, then think, or mm-hmm. report.
Mm-hmm.
I want to run something by you guys. So there is a Philadelphia Eagles beat writer for an online source only. And maybe you guys saw this today on Twitter. So Eric Reed, you're familiar with him, Lauren?
Mm-hmm.
Just signed with the Panthers and was, you know, kind of a partner with Colin Kaepernick in all the protesting stuff. So he went out and acted wild yesterday to Malcolm Jenkins, a Philadelphia Eagle who has partnered with the NFL. And Reed called Jenkins a neo-colonist and all these. He's sold out.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much Malcolm X versus Martin Luther King mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. way. So Eric Reed got caught in a weird meme moment. This guy who works for this website... his thing is to draw stick figures, and they're very funny, and he includes them in their articles and in his articles, and they're very funny. It's his thing. So he did a picture of Eric Reed, a character, a stick figure, and I didn't even know, but it came off as racially insensitive, where people took it that way in the black community, because I guess it was like old blackface type photos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was eviscerated. Now, I know him a little bit through Twitter and stuff, and, you know, sent him a supportive message. And you can imagine how this thing went nuclear. And I don't know if it got picked up by other websites. Someone showed Eric Reed the drawing in the locker room. And he's like, yeah, that's just a racist dude and blah, blah, blah. How do you guys feel about something like that? Because my defense of it was, you don't know what you don't know. But still, you know, the internet is a wild place, and people make up their own narratives. Have you guys ever been caught with like your pants down and feet like that?
I know that's a tough one. I'm trying to think about.
Like I've said on the air before, I said tranny.
And oh, sure.
Philip on the show with us before, he's like, that's a slur. You probably upset some people. So we came back on the air. I was like, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. Like, that was just mm-hmm. something colloquial. Like, I didn't know that that was akin to like an N-word or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. I that's why we often lose intent and context online where people make up their own.
Well, and I think online people tend to just be more casual and flippant, and even if
something
it's
something they would never say to somebody's face,
yeah. right? Or you forget too that you're in a, you know, it might be your personal Facebook or your personal Twitter or Instagram, but you still represent whoever you work for in a sense. I mean, especially if I'm tweeting about, you know, a city councilman or something like that. I mean, you have to just remember your audience too. I'm trying to think. I don't know that we've really gotten into an example that's blown up quite so much.
Any of your coworkers at the paper?
I'm really trying to think.
Well, it's good that you have to think hard for it rather than like this one instance.
Well, I mean, there's like the funny ones where someone tweets from the Blades. I mean, someone will tweet from either or thinks they're using their personal Facebook and they're using
and
the
they're
Blades
still
Facebook.
Lying.
And there was, you know, they write something. I mean, I don't even know if that's happened though. We were talking about the Chicago Tribune that poor whoever did that.
What happened?
Some social media manager. It wasn't that bad, but they had some quote from the president with which I think objectively could be called an incoherent sentence that was just like
you couldn't.
I mean, just you look at it and the. They quote tweeted whoever's it was, and it was from the official Chicago Tribune account, and all it said was "Sweet Jesus," which like is not of all the things that you could accidentally tweet. Right. Like, yeah. It was exasperated, but it wasn't like you know this. You know,
but
people
right
said
away,
worse things about the president.
Yeah,
people were screenshotting it and whatever, and it went down. And
I
they
got
immediately,
you, Chicago Tribune. Oh, you know, we see your motivation.
We
blah,
see
blah,
your
blah,
bias, and yeah.
Let me ask you this. I don't like to go down the route of people are more sensitive these days, but I do feel like people are looking for a reason not to be outraged, but almost to justify their social media accounts. Like, in things that you would never have an opinion on in the past, you feel the need because you saw something, a tweet or whatever, to hop in to again, like, justify the presence of this account.
So I think there's enough legitimate things that we should be outraged with in the world that I do get a little exasperated with the small potatoes. Like, I would never say someone is not justified in their free speech abilities because that's what our entire livelihood is based on. But I do think that sometimes there can be an echo chamber of like, I'm just going to get really mad about this. When you're like, cool, let's get mad about other things that are actually really terrible.
Yeah, I don't know what I can add to that without getting frustrated. I just think we all know this, it's easier to say something behind your computer screen or behind your phone than it would be in person to someone, or, you know, would you jump into that conversation if it was happening with strangers at bar you were at or a park you were at?
Or would you be willing to argue in good faith as opposed to just, like, taking the absolute extreme to an opinion? Like, if I thought that whatever opinion you had, you were arguing, you know, with the actual intent of, like, learning what the other side was feeling. I think I would be much less, I'd be much more willing to, like, see that continue if you felt like the other person was actually not just trying to scream.
Well, and people get, they're really comfortable being very personal in their attacks. I mean, I was reading a thread of an NPR reporter who I like to listen to, and it was someone who said, you know, why are you on air? Your voice is so grating. I have to turn off the, you know, whatever. And they're just these personal, know. And
women get it so much. Yeah. Female reporters get it so much.
That was one of the things I wanted to ask you guys, like the differences between the vitriol that you get rather than some of the guys, like Jay and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's awful. Like, I have, women have my pity and sympathy because men are evil and there are some women who are equally as evil. And right. You know, another, again, I can bring this up with you guys because we all live in the same realm. These people that we talk about, these despicable human beings, are the minority. They are very loud, but somehow, some way, in some cases, they have taken a majority of the power in the narrative. And it's so unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like, if you had a great meal at a restaurant, are you going to write to them or call them and say, like, oh my gosh, the salad I had was so wonderful and fresh and it was perfect? Probably not.
I like my salad. That you left, you're like, okay.
Yeah. But found a hair in it, it had mold on it. I mean, you're going to say something. I hope that when I don't hear anything about an article I wrote, that's because people recognize, you know, that it's fair, they value it. I think people tend to call when they want to say something negative.
Yeah.
But I also think that our male coworkers don't get called the C word as often as sometimes we do. So it's just another element of being a woman.
Well, and it's part, I mean, you talk about people being nasty, but it's also people not taking you seriously or being dismissive or underestimating your ability to follow along with a budget book, for example. And this example is actually not from sometime in Toledo, but I was covering a health system in Wyoming, and sometimes it's just the tone of voice of, let me help you very slowly through this. Sure, I appreciate that, but I can follow along. Thank you. You know, would you say that to a man? Maybe not.
Yeah.
So that's been interesting. I will say, at least in our newsroom, we have a pretty good balance of men and women, and that is helpful. We could do better in our leadership roles, to be honest. And that also brings up, and now I'm really pivoting, so you can bring me back if you need
by
to.
All means.
But just talking about, like, not knowing that something was maybe offensive or insensitive, I think that something that a lot of media organizations need to do, and I'll say locally too, they need to do a better job of covering diverse communities. And that's something that we've been talking about too, that I'm really happy that we're doing.
Yeah. Would you give me an example of maybe how you guys have done that, or you've done that?
Well, I think here's, as I'm thinking of what impacts people when I write about, you know, something, a city council decision or something, I oftentimes will just run out to the bus stop or the cafe or something and catch someone to talk to them. And I realize, wow, I'm only talking to people downtown. I need to do a better job of getting into East Toledo or going over in North Toledo and asking them, you know, when this impacts them. I think looking for stories that affect different religious groups is something, you know, that our religious writer does a really good job with.
Yeah.
But I think just having the dialogue that it's not, so many of our stories can be reflective of, again, like elected officials, and you have to think about the people who voted to elect them in. And Toledo's a very diverse city, so you got to do a better job.
Not compared to Chicago.
No,
I mean, this is like the straight black and whitest place I've ever been. There's very little outside of that. So, but again, I am at least aware enough to know that everything is relative and everything is perspective. Mm-hmm. So I get your point.
Mm-hmm.
But
I came from Traverse City, Michigan, most recently. So for me, I'm like, this
I
is
also
a very
think,
diverse city.
Right, of
plus,
cities with 300,000 people or whatever, like to have as large of an Arab population as we do, and like there's a decent sized Hispanic community.
There is. But yeah. I mean, there's Spanish speaking services and other. Oh, that's interesting. But there are just things that, again, this all comes back to the resources too, though. It's like I need to push myself to get up from my desk, but I also, you know, I just wish sometimes we were back in the day when the newsroom had 100 reporters.
And
so you
they said, go take 2 days and wander around this neighborhood.
Right, just go talk to people.
So I know that was a tangent, but also that you were talking about thinking about, you know, what you're tweeting or posting, and I think just trying to learn as much as you can about all the different people in the community that you're reporting on can
might
help
save you
avoid
from some of those just foot and mouth moments. Yeah. If you know somebody, you know, you only know that, you know, maybe the word tranny would be, you know, would have a strong reaction from people. You know, you get educated because you meet people in those communities who are like, you know, I know you don't know that, but here's why.
Just so you know.
And it stays with you because you have that personal connection with, you know, XYZ person who helped you learn that.
Like, I know I have the latitude to be blue at times because people know me. If someone grabbed my audio and flipped it out somewhere else and they'd be like, this guy's saying this on the radio, on the podcast, like, he's an insensitive asshole and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so that's why those connections are important with people, so that our communities rally behind us if we do slip up and they can speak for our character.
Mm-hmm.
This will be a harder part, and if you don't want to talk about it, I get it, so we can go to the fun stuff and wrap up. But can you, you hinted about how you guys get more grief totally, mostly, unnecessarily when it comes to being women as opposed to men. What about over the last 2.5 years or so, have you gotten calls that your coverage is skews a certain way? And Sarah, maybe this is more directed at you since you're involved in politics, and I know you know the question that I'm asking. Have certain people felt more empowered to voice their opinion? Am I asking this the right way, Lauren?
Yeah, no. It's interesting because I think...
The liberal media bias.
Except I think we would have maybe not an equal number, but we definitely have a significant number of callers who call in and have no idea that there is another group of people who are calling in saying we are biased on the other side.
And I guess
they come in and they say, you know, whatever, the liberal mainstream media, and they have feelings about that anytime we, you know, write about any kind of policy or you know, thing that they find to be too far left. And at the same time, you know, The Blade has gotten a lot of grief for taking a right turn in its editorials and some of its coverage and being arguably more favorable to the president than some other editorial boards have been. And so it's just interesting to hear both of those calls. Sometimes I sit in and sub in on our, do some editing on our city desk. And so I pick up the kind of mainline newsroom phone. Mm-hmm. And I have heard equally very angry people assuming that we are either very far left or very far right. And I want to be like, are you reading the same newspaper?
Lauren, I would say that in that case, you guys, you get an A+ for what you're doing then. It reminds me of when it comes to a deal or a transaction or a trade, it's a good deal for both people if both parties walk away feeling like they gave something up. And mm-hmm. that speaks to what you said. You got liberals and conservatives calling in, both complaining about the same exact thing, essentially. But to that point, like, it's amazing how, maybe more than ever over the last couple of years, how two different people can read the same exact thing and see things completely differently. Sarah?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I'm lucky in the sense that, like, local politics, I mean, yes, okay, if you look at city council, there's 12 council members, 8 of them are Dems, there's an independent, there's 2 Republicans. So you could think that, oh, well, if she's quoting these city council members in all her stories, it's probably going to lean pretty Democrat or pretty liberal because there's an overwhelming majority of Dems on city council. But local politics, it's so interesting. It's not quite as, there's not as much of like this visceral partisanship. Yeah. At least
observation. Yeah, and I think it's because like, Toledo City Council isn't deciding about, you know,
abortions or immigration.
I mean, they can make policies about, you know, we're going to be a welcoming city for immigrants,
right.
And people
yep.
can find fault with that, or they can, you know, declare whatever day and, you know, Pride Month or something. People might have problems with that, but for the most part, the really like flashpoint issues that people have that make them like dyed-in-the-wool Republicans or Democrats on a national level, like, it just doesn't
right.
happen.
But there mm-hmm. probably are people who naively call up and
sure.
think they're seeing more liberal or conservative news, which might just be like AP stories anyway to that degree, right?
Yes. And often I have to be like, what's the byline on there?
Right.
That is a New York Times story, sir.
Mm-hmm.
That did not get produced by anyone in Toledo.
Fun stuff. Sarah, what's, at least here at The Blade, what was your favorite story that you've done?
Oh, I didn't prepare to answer that question.
Lauren, I'm going to go, Lauren, you can think about it.
At The Blade.
Lauren, you can say it's a NAMI thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I always have fun when I talk to you. let's see, the most fun story?
Most rewarding.
Because a lot of the stories we do are not necessarily fun. They're like heavy topics.
Most rewarding
fun,
for
no,
you.
Like,
fun. Like, there are segments I've done, podcasts or pieces that I've written, and I look back and go, wow, did I really do that? Like something like that. That'll like
damn good writing.
Like you're like, wow, this is like, I'm really good at what I do. Rewarding, fulfilling. Like, this is why I do this kind of moment.
Oh, man.
You said I wasn't going to get any tough questions I think, in here.
I know, really, this last question, this is the hard one.
So I think the most rewarding, and it's been kind of in, over the course of several months, not necessarily one story, but building on it, was the story with the most kind of through lines that I've been able to track is Toledo's lead law, mm-hmm. which was, it's just been a mess, and it's now getting appealed in the courts, and all of that feels very... it can feel very bureaucratic because, you know, the heated moments happened in the kind of insular city council, or it's in a courtroom or at the health department, and it feels kind of divorced from real people. But as part of our reporting, we went and knocked on the doors of every house that had orders to vacate where kids, you know, no one should be living there because the houses weren't safe to live in. And that's like kind of related to the lead law, but it's a slightly different program. But this, looking at this issue of like, how do we keep our kids safe in the housing that they live in, and really knocking on all those doors, you get real people's stories in a way that isn't like we're going to just scream at each other at city council, because those meetings got really heated. And like, mm-hmm. yes, those are real people with interest, but it's different than showing up on someone's doorstep and like, you know, are you willing to talk to me about your kid and what kind of speech delays and you know, special ed programs and all these other things that they've had to deal with, or you having to leave your house and not having money to get a first month's deposit or whatever. That's been really,
yeah.
Right. That's been really rewarding in the sense that I've been able to stay with it. And it's been this thing that's kind of grown and seen where this thing goes. So I think that's been the most time consuming, but also sure. rewarding thing of my time here at the Blade.
Sarah.
Okay. So I knew this would happen. I was just listening to Lauren's answer and not really thinking of my answer. But I'm trying to think of a specific story, but I kind of have to agree. It's, any time that you go door to door to try and talk to someone about a story, I always kind of have fun with that because it's sort of nerve-wracking, and especially...
Oh, I hate it. I hate it, but also it's... Yeah.
It's so important. But also this, like, I don't answer the door when people knock right. on my door anymore,
so these
right?
days,
if
yeah.
they know
right.
me, they're going to call me or text me or...
We don't pick up
our
phones.
I'm always so thankful yeah, when people notice. Talk to us. It's a miracle every time someone's like, yes, you can talk to me and use my full name. Like, just, mm-hmm. what about that story you did around Christmas? Was it last year? That little boy who came here
great.
For club
yeah.
foot surgery. Mm-hmm. That was maybe one of my favorite mm-hmm. things you've written.
Yeah, that I liked the foster care one, too.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was a good way to meet families and kind of hear their stories. And that was to discuss a real issue that we have here, and that's a lack of foster parents. That was a whole year ago.
Do you
already.
Guys... You guys have... are you on your preferred beats? What are some like some short-term goals... Sarah?
Ooh. So I love covering City Hall.
Okay.
I'm really excited to be able to get to do this because it's the city I live in, and I get to have, you know, a front seat look at the policies, how, you know, the money is spent and the key players that are making these decisions, and kind of seeing how the sausage gets made, for mm-hmm. lack of a better word, and then really be able to dissect that and put it out in something that's palatable and that gets, you know, my next door neighbor to care about it. And so every day I really enjoy doing that. But I will say I miss covering the public schools because I just think there's so everything starts in the schools. They're such a vital institution.
Yeah.
And it's not just the kids. I mean, they're so
it's a big employer in town. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a whole. Yeah.
Is the arrow for TPS pointing up?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I mean, again, I was only covering it for a little bit, but I think so.
I think if you went to every city, Chicago, mm-hmm. around the country, every city public school system has the same struggles as TPS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they get so much grief. And then it's like, look at what their alums are doing. Look
right.
at how many people have great jobs and have stayed here, or who have gone on to college and, you know, made a big name for themselves. Or I don't know. I think they get... They're in a tough spot.
Yeah.
But schools, it's a way you can... It reflects issues of poverty, issues of health, issues of how public policy impacts
right.
them.
Race, geography.
Yeah, all that. So I do slightly miss that, but I'm really happy covering City Hall.
Lauren?
Sure.
I'm real happy.
Health forever?
I pushed really hard not to, so we did some beat shuffling earlier this year, and I was like, no, I finally know what I'm doing. You have to leave me here for a little bit. I just feel like you're never going to, the nice thing about health, unlike some other beats where you feel like, you know, maybe there's a kind of strict, narrow thing of what is within your realm to cover. You know, I could veer totally into more of a business of healthcare boom and infrastructure and building and things,
politics,
or you could go
healthcare.
Right, or totally public health, needle exchange. You know,
you could.
You know, you could. I mean, really, I could like reinvent the beat and move it in a lot of different directions. So I'm not done with it yet. I would be open to cover something else, you know, some point, but...
I like how you pointed out, like, the universal nature of it. Like, I don't know if you did anything, but you could easily do something on, like, the bike share program.
Yeah.
You could make anything a health issue. You're totally right.
Yeah. And a lot of times when we talk about health, we talk about the environment we live in, you know, whether it's your housing or your ability to get into green space in your city. Is like all these things we're talking about that are really more kind of policy-wise are very people-driven.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, I have I'll ask it as a question, and you can tell me or I'll say it, and you can tell me that I'm wrong or not. And you're so close to it. I feel like Wade has all good people in place, and it is so different with the way he's doing things for how long I've lived here in the 6 years, but there are still some head-scratching decisions. And I know that, look, there are backdoor politics, there's a lot of diplomacy involved, and sometimes things are just going to get done. Anybody that's been in any kind of workplace, there are always politics involved. Would you say that my statement is accurate? Like, we're going in a good direction, but there are still some head-scratching decisions?
I think so. Again, so I've lived here about 2 years, and when... with the previous administration, I will be honest, I was just like kind of trying to get my feet under me, and I didn't read a whole lot of I read the big things, the $8 million.
That we found?
All those stories. But I do, again, from talking to people either at council meetings or when I'm talking to people at events, and I say, well, how do you think the mayor's doing? You know, people are generally positive. It is interesting. There are some things that I guess I thought I would have seen maybe some more aggressive policy changes just based on his campaign. But again, he's not even done with his first year.
Right.
I'm trying to.
I'm just happy
patient.
Was he at the Buddy Walk over the weekend?
He slept at Tent City.
He was dressed down. He wasn't wearing a suit. I can't wait to tell Nick.
I know.
Oh, he is always wearing a suit.
We had to tell the photographer. He was like, he's going to be in a UT sweatshirt. Like, you got to go find him then. He's going to be, you know.
He was, I saw him in one of the Jeeps to kick off the parade at Jeep Fest. And it was a hot day.
Was he in a suit?
He's always in a suit.
Close enough.
Smith Vest? At the park, that was like a 90-degree day in a suit.
I think he's doing a good job with the right people. There are just some decisions in like...
Huh. He is an eternal optimist. I mean, he is always smiling. And I will say, and if this changes, he can go back and listen to this, but he's very responsive, not only to me, but I see him talk to Toledoans who don't work in government or big business or, you know, the news business. He's always very gracious with people, and he always makes time and tries to be transparent and answer.
He's got the PR part of it.
Little late to everything.
He's got the optics right.
He totally does, and he doesn't shy away from answering hard questions. Now, will he answer them completely? I mean, he's a politician,
right.
So
they never do.
But
he'll just pivot and.
But he answers.
Chaucer,
I mean, that's the thing.
Shakespeare.
He says, "I'm always prepared to talk about anything because I'm the mayor," and I'm, you know, so far that has proven to be true.
Last question for you, Sarah. Did I live up to what Lauren built us up to be, Jeff Fawn?
Yeah, this is great.
I didn't really too hard, right? I'm
this
pretty easy.
This went by fast, actually.
Yeah, an hour.
I know.
Thank you guys for your time.
Thank you.
Lauren Lindstrom and Sarah Elms from the Toledo Blade.
This has been a Cumulus Media and Q105 collaboration. Three unicorns were harmed and lost their rainbows and horns in the production process. We use cookies for various purposes, like eating and flavor for protein shakes. And you have agreed to this and all other secret policies by enjoying the preceding audio content, which we highly encourage you to hashtag subscribe and share. You can click here for all other legal crap. And now hit skip intro to go to the next podcast. Just kidding. It's the See More Episodes option in your app. Q105.